Hi there, I'm Matthew Asbell, and welcome to Intangify. This is my inaugural webcast where we discuss the intangible aspects of business. It's often the intangible aspects of business that is what makes them successful. And there are many different aspects of what's intangible that can be helpful to the business. My particular area is intellectual property law, where I talk about the rights and the things that people create in their businesses. But other aspects are personnel and the experience of those personnel and the culture of the business, or digital assets, data, formulations, the prose, the art, the music, the designs, the processes. All different aspects of business can be intangible, and often this is really what makes a business successful. So in this program, we'll talk about how people obtain, employ, and create, retain, and maintain, and even transfer intangible aspects of their business. I mentioned my name is Matthew Asbell. I'm an intellectual property lawyer, and that's really the law of creation. So my area of practice deals with what people make, whether it's expressive art or music or prose they write, or if they create new inventions or designs. They have brand names, they have ways in which they're found on the internet. All of these are the areas in which I practice. I also serve as a professor at Fordham and Cardozo Law Schools, and I frequently mentor entrepreneurs, young lawyers, and students through various organizations. My interest is really about languages and speaking to people in the language that they understand. And it often requires you to transform, you know, how you convey something. Today's topic is bringing experience to Bierman. It's bringing experience to Bierman because my guest is Rod Bierman from the law firm of Offutt Kerman. And, you know, before I introduce Rod, I want to tell you a little bit more about myself because it will relate to what Rod's experience is. Prior to becoming a lawyer, I lived many other lives. Some of those lives included, I attended medical school, I taught proprietary software, and I managed singer-songwriters and recording artists for about 10 years. I even waited tables at one point. And somehow all of those different experiences and skills, they came together in what I do now. I use them, I refer to them, and I remember them in the people I'm speaking to understand their perspectives. And I use some of the skills I learned in those different careers and those different experiences towards my legal practice. So, you know, having different life experiences can really be about having applicability, even when it seems unrelated. It having applicability to your current business or your current practice. And for this reason, I've asked my colleague Rod to join us. And that's because Rod is, you know, what he'll tell you a little bit about his career path, but formerly he was an actor. And we're really going to talk about at least three examples of how he, as an actor, had different experiences and how they apply in his law practice today. Those are particularly how he dealt with character studies, auditioning, and being in the spotlight, all of which are things he uses. Our goal is really to help our listeners think about the application of seemingly different life experiences to their business. So with that, I'd like to welcome Rod Bierman. And Rod, could you please introduce us to you by telling us a little bit about your current and your former professions?
Sure. So I was an actor in Los Angeles, out in Hollywood, for a number of years, about 11 years. Prior to coming to law school, I was very involved in doing that. And decided to go to law school and became, shortly thereafter, an employment lawyer. And so right now, what I do is I'm an employment lawyer who works with companies. And there's really three areas of work that I do. My primary work is with companies. I also do what's called executive compensation. So I help executives who are exiting business or entering business and negotiate their contracts as an exit, negotiate their contracts when, or their severance packages when they leave, and then contracts when they enter. And I also do sexual harassment prevention training, which here in New York is a mandatory requirement for all companies, whether you have one employee or 1,000 employees. So, and it's started in 2018 to be mandatory. And I'd been doing it for many years prior to that. But then since 2018, it's really been a nice, not, it's, you know, it's really important, actually, service that I provide, I think. So those are the three areas of my practice currently.
So it seems to be a long way to go in some senses to go from, you know, acting in television and movies to being a labor and employment lawyer, though I can certainly see the parallels, at least for the sexual harassment training. I don't know how many people in the audience have done the sexual harassment training. And, you know, you watch a lot of videos with actors all the time. So I guess it sort of ties in, but it seems like a long way.
It does. It was, you know, it was a very, very hard transition. There were many, and we'll talk about some of those later, but there were many aspects of it that were transferable. But going from a field of practice where you're taught not to think, but to feel, to a practice where you're taught not to feel, but to think. So it was a very, very rough and plus when I went to law school, I had two young kids, so the whole process was very, very arduous, but well worth the effort for sure.
So tell us how you got started in the entertainment business.
Well, I was pre-med in college, and I had been swamped with chemistry and biology classes and generally some sort of mathematics class. And I took a semester before I was going to take the MCATs to go and kind of see what else is out there academically. And I took an acting class. And all of a sudden, I realized that this is what I wanted to do. So I had to have a very interesting conversation with my parents, telling them that I wasn't going to go to med school, that I was going to go out to Los Angeles and be an actor. That was an interesting conversation. I used to say series of conversations. But once they realized that I was serious, that I wasn't just, hey, you know, trying to get an extended vacation of some sort, they were all for it. And they supported me, and I couldn't have done it without their sort of moral support. So packed up my bags a week after graduation, drove out to Los Angeles. I knew my parents knew one person who had lived there currently, and was able to. I stayed in a room of her house and started my journey. And it was quite an interesting and incredibly fun experience for sure.
I can definitely relate to that. As my mother is still working as a physician. And was so excited and proud when I was in med school, and when I told her I was leaving med school to manage recording artists, I think a little bit of her died. She's listening to this conversation, so you know, I'm sure she would deny that. But in any case,
that's funny.
But it sounds awfully glamorous, you know. So you know, I don't know. I want to fast forward and ask you, like, why would you leave such a profession?
Well, so just really quickly, when I went out to Los Angeles, I was very fortunate to, you know, come across this manager who was legitimate. She was able to get me a commercial agent. I'd started doing commercials, did about 10 or 15 commercials. That commercial agent was worked within a larger agency that also managed talent. So they ended up signed me on as a talent for acting, and I did small roles, tiny little things here and there, and one thing led to another. I started doing guest spots on TV, and that's when independent films were really big around that time. And so I did a number of independent films that never saw the light of day. But then I got into larger movies, and it started. And I think probably the two biggest movies that people may or may not remember is one called The Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle with Robert De Niro, Rene Russo, Jason Alexander, Jonathan Winters, a number of individuals, and was produced by Robert De Niro. And then after that, I did a movie called Pearl Harbor, which was with Ben Affleck and big directed by Michael Bay. This big Pearl Harbor, big action, sweeping action, epic kind of movie, and that was incredible. Really, really a lot of fun. So, but I had two kids, two young babies, and a wife. And I started realizing that I had about 10% input into whether I worked or not, right? So I, in order to get a job, you have to go through directors, casting agents, producers, writers, lawyers, managers, agents. There were all these people that were involved in, any particular role that I achieved. And so I realized that, I could go in and whether it was a meeting or an audition and knock it out of the park. But at the end of the day, it wasn't up to me. And so the idea of not having any control over my own destiny really was a bit unnerving when it wasn't just me. So I decided to figure out, well, what can I do to, I mean, I knew how rough that transition was for me to get into entertainment business. What can I do that has some similarities? So I'm not just starting over completely. My mother-in-law was a judge at the time. My father-in-law was a civil rights attorney, and still they, still are. Still, he still is, and she's a lawyer now, retired. But and getting to know my wife and marrying her and the extended family, I realized that I could be a lawyer, and specifically, I could be a litigator, and use a lot of the skills that I had gained through the entertainment business. And use them as a litigator. So that's really why I changed. And I'll tell you just a real quick anecdote to give you another perspective.
If you don't mind, we're going to go to break and I'll have you
Oh,
tell
okay.
us every anecdote when you come back. So you've been listening to Intangify on talkradio.nyc. For a break, but coming up, we're going to talk about Rod's experiences as an actor, doing character studies, auditioning, and being in the spotlight, and the application of those experiences to his day-to-day practice of law. We'll be right back.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you on edge? Hey, we live in challenging, edgy times, so let's lean in. I'm Sandra Bargeman, the host of The Edge of Every Day, which airs each Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live with me and my friends and colleagues as we share stories and perspectives about pushing boundaries and exploring our rough edges. That's The Edge of Every Day on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back to Intangify. My guest is Rod Bierman, and we've been talking about bringing experiments to bear or to Bierman. And Rod, as we were talking in our last segment, you started to say that you had some interesting anecdotes you wanted to share about your acting career. So let's go back to that.
Sure. So what I was thinking of first is that, you know, when I was thinking about leaving, it's one of those situations where, for example, if you want to buy a white car, you want to buy it because nobody else has white cars that you know, and then you get on the road and all you see is white cars. So, you know, I started thinking about leaving. And once I started thinking about leaving, I started seeing things differently. I had done a soap opera for CBS for a little while and done some shows for CBS and auditioned at CBS for a long time. And CBS had this casting office at the time where they had a kind of administrative or, you know, secretarial office up front and a long hallway back to the casting offices. And I'd walked that hallway probably, I don't know, 50 times. And this time I started walking down the hallway and realized that they had posters of all their famous shows, the shows that they considered to be their top shows. And I remember looking at these posters and saying, really, for the first time, I remember that show, but where are all these people? I remember that show. Where are all these people? And I realized that you could have a show that CBS considers to be one of the top shows that they've ever done and never work again. And so those are the kind of things that I started, you know, realizing and really then lit a fire under my desire to leave and pursue a different career, because there were no guarantees at all. But, you know, in terms of anecdotes in the entertainment business, I guess the one that comes to mind is when I did Pearl Harbor, I got to know Jerry Bruckheimer fairly well. Jerry Bruckheimer is very soft-spoken, incredibly smart, but unbelievably driven. And so we're off the coast on a nuclear aircraft called the USS Stennis. And we're there, first of all, because Jerry and Michael Bay wanted to watch these Super Hornets land and take off the aircraft carriers. So we're all there, you know, handful of us are there watching these, you know, jets take, you know, come on and off the aircraft carrier. And then they flew in these B-25 bombers, which were for the actual footage. So anyways, they're setting up and they've lit this, and every set is lit incredibly generally. And I see Jerry, and he's out there taking pictures of all this, of the bombers, of the aircraft carrier. And I thought, oh, that's kind of nice. You know, he's, you know, memorializing this big movie for himself or whatever. And about, I don't know, maybe a month before the movie comes out, I'm at Barnes and Noble's, and I look down, and they used to have this table that with all their books that they're showcasing for the time. And here is this leather-bound, thick book of, and it says Pearl Harbor, photographs from the set by Jerry Bruckheimer. And I was thinking to myself, this guy has more money than God. He's incredibly busy, but he's thinking, you know what? I'm going to take a bunch of pictures and I'm going to stick them in a book and charge. And it was like a $400 book, charge $400 and, you know, make some additional money on the side. I mean, this is, you know, it was just bizarre. I mean, but that's his mind, you know, never to waste an opportunity, I guess. But, you know, anyways, so I've got a million sort of celebrity encounters and those kind of things that I could tell you about. But that's the one that kind of comes to mind that is so unique. And I think and he had, you know, he had certainly had a reputation of being a hellraiser when he was younger, but he was just a smart guy and really mild-mannered and, you know, had some really, really wonderful conversations with him.
It sounds like he was really just anticipating social media. I mean,
right.
You know, the people at our firm are always like, oh, don't forget to take a picture when you give that speech.
Right.
And I inevitably always forget, but, sure. But you know, that's what we're supposed to be doing these days, you know. You know, whatever it is, take the picture of it, post it on social media. It's going to get you some, you know, clicks or whatever.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And as I said, film sets are always lit incredibly. So this photograph almost takes itself. But not to take anything away from his photography skills. I'm sure they were, you know, wonderful. But it just was an interesting thing to find out about him.
Well, I wasn't planning on hiring him for my, you know, upcoming bar mitzvah. No, I'm kidding. So Rod, you know, I think, you know, we've come up with, you've mentioned several examples of how your acting career has impacted your practice. I think I'm about to sneeze, so we'll see. Hopefully if that's not going to happen, we'll see what happens here. But I think one of the, you know, and it's funny because, you know, just prior to the start of the podcast this afternoon, you and I were even talking about, like, you know, looking at the camera and the struggles to look at the camera on your laptop, right?
Right,
look
right.
At the camera instead of the person. Like, these are sort of these types of skills that you would think an actor, or, you know, that's sort of the kind of thing they know how to do. I think we were talking about the example of Rocky and Bullwinkle, where you know it's part live and part animated, and you got to talk to the character that's over here, even though there's nobody there.
Right.
But you mentioned some other nice examples that I think, you know, apply really well in your life and in your practice. And I think one of them was character studies. So I wanted to know, understand, what's a character study? What are you talking about?
So, you know, when I started to learn what it meant to become an actor, I did a number of things to familiarize myself with the business. One of which, probably the most key component, is learning what it means to act, right? My one acting class in college did not prepare me to, you know, take the world by storm or take Hollywood by storm, for sure. So I got into a method class, which is a type of acting where it's a lot of internalization, and even I could tell you all about it, but it would take too much time, and it's a different podcast. But you really look at the characters who you're going to play, and I'll give you a perfect example. I played for lack of a better word, it was an NBC Movie of the Week back when they had Movies of the Week. And I played a preppy rapist. Okay. So, I was dating my wife at the time, my soon to be wife at the time, and had not met my mother-in-law, and my soon to be wife said, "Hey, Rod's going to be on TV. You know, this is the guy I'm dating." You know, it's just like, I could not get over that for the longest time. Trying to overcompensate for that when I met her. But anyways, that wasn't me, obviously. And so you have to figure out, when you play characters, especially characters you don't like or may not be likable, what makes them tick? Why do they do the things that they do? What's their motivation? Because they think it's normal, or they think that's okay, or it's acceptable, or whatever their mindset is. Get into the head of the character and figure out, you know, what their perspective is on life and all that kind of stuff, right? So what I found was that method of, you know, figuring out the other side, the other thing, the other person, became very, very intangible with negotiations, right? So part of my practice is, as I said, I negotiate settlement packages, negotiate contracts when they're entering employment, and defending lawsuits that are brought by, you know, individuals against companies. And oftentimes, you know, cases will settle. So in the negotiations, whether it's severance packages or lawsuits, I always try to figure out, well, where's the other side coming from? What's their point of view? What are they trying to achieve? And how can I get there with them while still being the zealous advocate for my client, right? So, and a lot of people don't approach it that way. A lot of people say, "I'm going to be a bulldog, and I'm going to demand this, and I'm going to demand that." And you know, oftentimes those kind of negotiations don't go anywhere. And people confuse being a zealot for your client that you have to be a bulldog, and it's not the case. You can still be a zealous advocate, but understanding what the other side wants or their perspective will help you get to a middle ground, you know, or get to a place where things can settle. And part of that is talking to your clients and helping them understand it. But in the first instance, that's always what I do. I look at the other side's from the other side's perspective, and I think it really benefits those negotiations.
It's pretty funny. I think because in our first segment, when you were talking a little bit about the transition from actor to lawyer, you said you know, you were you were taught to, what was it, feel, don't think, and then you were going to take a job where then you had to think, don't feel. And I think your description of how character studies applies to law is essentially, well, no, it's not really think, don't feel. It's actually, right. I'm going to use some of that feel. And you know, I mean, in working with clients, an important part of client communication is about empathy, right? We need to empathize with those clients and understand where they're coming from and their motivations and their goals. And when you have an adversary, I think similarly being able to put yourself in their shoes without giving in whatever necessarily they want, but putting yourself into their shoes to understand what drives them, it makes a lot of sense. It helps you know what the thing to offer that's going to get the thing that you need for your client is, right? So yeah. That makes a lot of sense to me. So we're about to go on another break. So I think when we come back for the third segment, I'm going to ask you a little bit about auditioning and about being in the spotlight. But for now, let me say that we'll go on break. You've been listening to Intangify on talkradio.nyc. So coming up, we'll talk about Rod's experience as an actor, dealing with auditioning and being in the spotlight, and the application of that experience to his day-to-day practice of law.
Are you passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to Intangify on talkradio.nyc. My guest is Rod Bierman from the law firm of Offutt Kerman, where he practices labor and employment law, but in another life, he was an actor. And we've been talking about how those experiences as an actor really lend themselves to his practice in labor and employment. But the idea, as it is in Intangify, to think about how that might work in helping you with your business, applying your prior experiences, even though they may seem unrelated to your actual practice and business. So Rod, when we were last speaking, you talked a little bit about character studies, but something else you started to talk about earlier was about this experience you had at CBS waiting in line or walking down the halls as you were preparing for a soap opera that you were participating in, acting in. And you were talking about, kind of going up and down those halls. And the picture in my head as I was, thinking of you walking down the halls at CBS maybe you're waiting in line in those halls to audition. I was picturing all these people just in front of you and you're pacing up and down this hall. I probably not really accurate, but but envisioning what it must have been like, you know, to audition. I've seen some auditions, and I gotta say, like I don't know how you do that, but tell us what auditioning's like, and how frequently you had to do it. Give us a sense of, you know, the amount of rejection you had to face, and then how does that experience apply to your law practice? You're muted.
Yeah, so, you know, it's funny how you put it, how many times you had to do it. I mean, you as an actor, you're dying for auditions, right? Because it's the entryway to work. So, you know, you wanted to have a lot of auditions. And the audition process varies. The audition process can be as simple as a meeting with somebody at a restaurant. It can be also, you know, auditioning in front of 50 people. And so, you know, the process is... Again, when I quickly realized that I had very little say in it, all I could do is go in and do my best, and the chips would fall where they may. It can be nerve-wracking, especially when there's a lot of money on the line, or a big part on the line. I remember I was auditioning for a new television show to be one of the regulars, and I was at Fox. And the most bizarre thing happened to me. And I auditioned probably 5 or 6 different times for this role. All, you know, each time it was more and more and more people. And I was about to go into a room with all the Fox TV execs and all their underlings. And, you know, it was going to be about 50 people to do this, you know, this scene that I'd been doing for now, probably did, you know, 5 or 6 other times. And their accountant came up to me and he said, I need you to look over this paperwork. I mean, I'm sitting in the chair about to go in. The guy's like, I want you to look over this paperwork. And I'm kind of like, why? And he said, well, this is the contract. I need you to sign the contract. So, you know, if we decide to go with you, we have you now. Because what they didn't want is me to go in, you know, or whoever to go in, kill it, have everybody go crazy for them. And now they hold them hostage and say, well, I'm not going to do it for X. I want to do it for 4X. I've got you. I've got the leverage. So they get you before the audition. I said, you mean on this piece of paper, I'm going to sign and I'm going to see how much you're going to pay me if I do well in this audition. And he kind of looked at me strange. And he said, yeah, I guess so. I said, I don't want to see it. I said, this is kind of, you know, not a great business person. I said, give me the piece of paper. I'm signing it. I'm not looking at it. He said, you don't want to look at it? I said, absolutely not. What's the last thing I want to do is look at something and say, you're going to be paid X amount of dollars if you do well in this audition. I don't need an additional pressure, you know? But anyway, so the thing that auditioning really helped me with, you know, was not only dealing with the nerves and all that kind of stuff, but, you realize that you're going in there to convince a person or a group of people that you are right for something. And you have to convey that message to them. You have to communicate that message to them. However, it is, you have to get them interested in what you're doing and saying and believing what you're doing and saying. And you want them to be on your side, right? And I realized that mentality applied to when I was an attorney, a judge, you know, arguing in front of a judge, getting the judge to understand, being able to communicate to the judge what I'm trying to, you know, say and have the judge understand it and want to be behind my position. And also with juries, right? When we would have trials, speaking to juries, conveying those messages to juries, just like the 50 people in that room, you know, 12 people sitting in a jury box, it's the same concept. Being able to communicate a message, wanting them to stay engaged in that message and understanding it and being, you know, behind you at the end of the day when that verdict is time to get to the verdict.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know, on the other hand, as I think about the way I envision you doing it when you were doing an audition, the persuasion that you're doing to try to get them to say, hey, you're the right guy for that is less verbal. I mean, it's verbal in the sense that you have lines to read, but it is more that you need to show them that you're right for the part then you need to tell them that you're right for the part. And part of me sort of is thinking about sort of drawing conclusions to that, or drawing analogy to that into legal practice. Part of that is the same in that you're, to be persuasive, you should show rather than tell. On the other hand, your tools as a lawyer are largely words. So I sort of struggle with, essentially, you are telling them why you know they should listen to you, and that seems less persuasive. I'm sure that you're using the audition skills you had. You probably apply more of the show versus the tell concept, but I'd love to hear what you have to say about that.
I mean, yeah, I think that, you know, one of the things that I learned pretty early on is that people want, you know, those folks in the room wanted to find the right person. They wanted to be excited. They wanted to be engaged. You know, the casting people wanted to be excited that they found somebody. They want, you know, and one of the ways that you can do that is you want to strip away their ability to have to try to imagine you as this person, right? So you go in dressed as the person, as simple as that may sound. So immediately they look at you and go, oh, okay, I think he's the right guy. I could see him playing this person, you know? So, you know, you wouldn't want to show up, you know, for your first day in trial in a t-shirt and jeans, you know, but looking the part is part of the process, whether it's, you know, speaking to a jury or a judge, or meeting a client even, you know, but it, yeah, for auditioning, you want it to be able to go in and really show them that you're the part, be able to read the lines, be able to convince them that they're your guy, and realize that they want to be convinced. They want to, you know, be engaged. They want to have all those things, all those, you know, those things being triggered so they can get excited about what they're doing. And they can, you know, tell the folks that they need to tell that they've found somebody, you know, in the same way a jury wants to be able to get in that jury room and said, I, you know, and talk to one another and say, yeah, I believed him. I believed what he said. I understood it. And, you know, I want to back this position that he's taking.
Yeah. I mean, I got to say, though, I don't know, in the post-COVID world, looking the part, like actually looking the part, I'm not so sure that yeah, has as much validity as it used to. But I also believe that, you know, you don't just look the part, and it's not just the words you speak, it's how you speak them. Yeah. You know, and that I'm sure is a skill that you learn as an actor, in terms of being persuasive, right? Meeting the part.
It's intangible. I mean, you know, you'd be surprised how many lawyers are, you know, I've done a lot of public speaking at the New York City Bar, for example. I'm do CLEs, and you as a professor certainly know that there are people who just do not understand what it means to communicate. And so, you know, it's when you have that skill, when you understand that it's important, you know, it makes your job so much easier. It really does.
So, you know, just, I guess I have to put this out there. I wanted to ring a bell. Like when you said intangible, I feel like anytime I hear the word intangible now on the show, I'm going to have a little bell, you know,
right.
no, that's great. The other thing that you mentioned, in that discussion a little bit earlier in this discussion, about the accountant coming up to you, like right before the audition, and it was pretty interesting. Where you went with that was quite different from where I thought you were going. But I wanted to share my vision of where I thought you were going, because it might actually be interesting as well, which is that, you know, a lot of what we do is about communication and the timing of communication. And it could mean the difference, between, you know, getting what you want and not. You know, the other day when you know, I was really hoping to come talk to you, you know, about the podcast, about a potential client matter that we were talking about and whatever, like I could sense the amount that was going on your plate at the time. And there was no way I was coming into your office right at that moment to talk to you about stuff that I knew could wait, that was not urgent, et cetera. But, you know, people don't always respect that, or else people try to use that. I mean, it's interesting. I was sort of joking during the break, but the program started and I'm live and I'm getting text messages and calls from people asking how to log on to the show. I'm like, you know, now's not exactly the best time to be asking me, you know? So I think that, you know, it's worth pointing out, right, an awareness of the recipient of your communication. The accountant clearly did not have that or was using it intentionally. And sometimes you do that in legal practice.
Yeah, he was definitely not using it intentionally. I don't think he was thinking about it at all, and was totally caught off guard when I said that I would sign it and I didn't want to look at it. You know, he just thought, well, this is an idiot actor who, you know, is just doesn't care about, and I really cared, but I, you know, now is not the time.
Yeah. You know, so. And you bought the Brooklyn Bridge, so that's good.
Right, right.
Congratulations.
And I got the part, by the way.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I think we are getting ready for another break. So let me say that, you know, you've been listening to Intangify on talkradio.nyc. And coming up, Rod and I will talk a little bit about being in the spotlight. And then after that, a little discussion about the things people create in the employment context. So we'll be back. Look forward to seeing you afterwards.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to Intangify on talkradio.nyc. We've been talking about bringing experience to Bierman with Rod Bierman. No, he's not a bartender, the beer man. No, he is actually a lawyer, a labor and employment lawyer. And prior to that, he was an actor. And we've been talking about your experiences, Rod, as an actor and taking those and applying them in your law practice, really for the benefit of our listeners to think about how their seemingly different experiences really might apply in their current businesses and current things that they're trying to do. You talked a little bit about character studies and about auditioning. I wanted to ask you about what it's like being in the spotlight and how that really impacts you in your legal practice.
So I think what, when we talked about this in the beginning, or, you know, earlier, what I really mean by that is, and it's really is a public speaking concept. I think, you know, where a lot of people who are reticent to be, to, you know, speak in public, whether it's at a dais, at a gathering of, you know, people who are there to honor somebody, or whether it's, you know, you are giving a lecturing, a students, or even giving a toast at a wedding.
Or even being on a live recorded podcast.
Being on a live recorded podcast. But what I mean by those examples is that you are the center of attention, right? You are, everybody is looking at you. And oftentimes people who are nervous in those settings don't like that kind of attention, right? And it's really not about, liking or not liking that attention, but it's being comfortable with the attention, right? And so, I mean, I never really liked that attention, but you have to understand to be comfortable with it. Otherwise, you're going to shut down. You're not going to be able to execute whatever it is you need to execute. And how this worked in the entertainment business, what, you know, and this is a little bit like what it means to audition, because, you know, that example I gave you, I was auditioning in front of 50 people. I mean, that's, you know, pretty nerve wracking. But when you're actually on a set and there is a crane with a camera on it, it's that is going to sweep through whatever it's going to sweep through and then end up right at looking, you know, right at you. And everybody there, the director, the producers, if they're on set, and, you know, 100 to 150 crew members are all looking at you. And I got to tell you something. Those crew members are wondering how many takes it's going to take before they get to go home. You know, so it's not everybody's there rooting for you to do a good job. They're rooting for you to just do it. And, you know, so they can either set up for the next shot. But it's all about how do we get to the craft table sooner, or, you know, get home quicker. You know, the director is hopefully your champion, but everybody else is, you know, just looking at the wristwatch and figuring out, you know, how much time they're going to be there. So, you know, again, being in a situation where you're, you know, in a jury box, I mean, you're addressing a jury, addressing a judge, or just being in a courtroom and, you know, talking to a judge, there are people there in the courtroom who are all looking at you that are, you know, there either observing or waiting to go on. If it's a setting like a trial, you've got a lot of people that are there, clients, you know, are looking at you, jury's looking at you, the judge is looking at you, the opposing counsel looking at you. I mean, you are the center of attention, whether you like it or not. And if you are not comfortable and can't figure out a way to get comfortable in those situations, you're going to, you know, end up being a different type of lawyer. Not saying an unsuccessful lawyer, but you could be a, you know, a business attorney where you never set foot in a courtroom and, you know, always working with a team of people. So it just, for me, it was I understood it. I got it. And I've always been very comfortable in those situations because I had to learn to get comfortable as an actor being in the spotlight.
Yeah. I'm one of those attorneys who really never goes in the courtroom. I deal with some disputes, but I don't have to appear live. And, you know, at least in most instances. And that doesn't come from a discomfort in sort of being the center of attention for periods of time. I wouldn't be doing a podcast if that were the case. But rather being able to be maybe quick enough on my feet to notice something or catch something or raise something in that live setting. I'm so singularly focused on whatever it is I'm doing in the moment that it's hard to get things in the periphery. So the idea of, you know, like an attorney does, you know, calling out objections to evidentiary state, you know, or statements made in the courtroom or stuff, I would be so worried about, well, the thing that I was trying to, you know, to say next to make sure I get that straight, that I might, like, you know, miss that.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you bring that up because, you know, I took a lot of improv classes and took a class or two at the Groundlings, which is this sort of famed LA improv studio that produced Will Ferrell and a bunch of the SNL current and former players. And, you know, improv is really about listening. And thinking on your feet is really about listening. And what happens when you get nervous or you get concerned about, you know, being in the spotlight, you tend to shut down, you tend not to hear things, and you start getting in your own head, which is sort of, you know, the worst thing you could possibly do in a setting where you have to think on your feet. So really the quickest way to be able to think on your feet is to listen and be able to be present and listen to what people are saying. And that's half the battle, because as lawyers, you know, if we hear what is being said, chances are we will have a response, you know, i.e. we will be able to think on our feet. But as soon as you stop listening, and because you're consumed with your own nervousness or whatever it might be, you'd be distracted because you're thinking about, you know, who you're going to see tonight at the restaurant, or what you're going to, you know, what you have, how you're going to get home from this, or whatever it might be that's, you know, that you're thinking about. As soon as you get into that mode, thinking on your feet is almost impossible.
Yeah. So I think going back to your kind of point, it's sort of about being relaxed in the environment so that you aren't stressing out about something that needs to, right, need to be thinking about. Well, thanks, Rod. I really appreciate your being here. And those were some fascinating examples. I wonder whether you have a message for, you know, the entrepreneurs and other business owners or service providers that are in our audience today about, you know, the application of their experience. Anything you'd like to share?
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you that when I went to law school, I was one of the older folks in my class, right? Most trajectories are you go to college and you go to law school, you know, or maybe you take a year and you go to law school because you didn't like what you were doing. You don't know what you want to do, so you can go to law school, right? So it was so clear when I was in class, the people that had no life experience and their inability to see a bigger picture of whether it be a case or whatever it might be in the law that we were studying, the folks that had some real world experience were head and shoulders above everybody else in many respects. And, you know, so those kinds of experiences that you've had, really try to mine them and look back and figure out, you know, what you can use, how you can use it. And you may be doing it without even knowing it. But there's always valuable nuggets there in your prior experience that you've had that you can apply to your everyday life. And I have to tell you that, you know, when I started law as a second career, I felt like I was playing catch up. But my growth was exponentially quicker than somebody's growth that came out of law school. So I was able to catch up pretty quickly because of all this experience that I was able to apply. So, you know, those prior experiences are, you know, invaluable. So as I said, mine them, figure out what you can use. And if you're using them, figure out how you can use them even more.
Thanks so much, Rod. My guest has been Rod Bierman, the Labor and Employment Practice at Offutt Kerman. Thank you for listening to Intangify. In our next episode, we'll discuss the free mentoring services available to small businesses and entrepreneurs through SCORE. Tune in weekly on talkradio.nyc on Fridays at 12 p.m. Eastern for the next Intangify podcast. Thanks so much. Take care.
Uplift, educate, empower.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you on edge? Hey, we live in challenging, edgy times, so let's lean in. I'm Sandra Bargeman, the host of The Edge of Every Day, which airs each Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live with me and my friends and colleagues as we share stories and perspectives about pushing boundaries and exploring our rough edges. That's The Edge of Every Day on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
Passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.